Welcome to the Spiritual Psychiatrist Podcast, the show where we explore the unity of spirituality and mental health. I'm your host, Dr. Samuel Lee, and it's a joy to be on this transformative, epic journey with you. I call the most epic love story ever written, the return of at least a billion souls back to source. As a board-certified psychiatrist with a deep passion for integrating spirituality and mental well-being, I'm here to guide you through the eternal life wisdom, latest science, expert interviews, and personal stories that will catalyze your path to healing, growth, self-realization, and self-actualization. Enough said, let's dive into today's episode. What's up, beautiful souls? Man, it's a joy. Welcome to the Spiritual Psychiatrist Podcast. Today, I got a dear brother, Dr. Stephen Young, as a special guest on the show. He is the creator of the Amortal Machine, and we're going to dive into that today. He is a master alchemist. He's been alchemizing spirituality and embodiment expert for the last, since he was 14 years old. So we're talking to a living legend here today and a new earth architect in the house today. Dr. Stephen Young, welcome to the show. It's an absolute pleasure and honor to have you on the show, man. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, I am just super excited to dive as deep as we can into all the topics today.
Agreed. Before we dive in, I always like to set the frequency. So I'm just going to speak a few words and set the frequency here, and then we will dive right in. By the love of original eternal source consciousness field, we have come. So setting a barrier now, the frequency of unconditional love on the physical, emotional, mental, spiritual plane around this podcast, around every ear that listens to these words. We set a barrier now, the frequency of unconditional love, and we tune into our heart space. We tune into our upper heart space, the place of divine neutrality, the perfection of what already is, to experience this podcast in complete totality. By the truth of original eternal source consciousness field, we stand. So we welcome in now the unadulterated truth. For the truth will set us free, and we are free indeed, and everybody is ready for the truth. And that's what everybody wants, is freedom. By the power of original eternal source consciousness field, we fly. Spread your wings, angel, it's time to fly. Darkness, we survive. Together now, we thrive. So we step into our power unapologetically, unconditioned, unprogrammed, unique oscillatory, vibratory reflection of creator source for such an important inflection point in humanity's history. We step into our power. Mother Earth is calling out for men and women who will step into their power by the grace of original eternal source consciousness field. Always grace, a grace for ourselves, grace for each other. We are alive because of grace, experiencing because of grace. Fill this place, fill this podcast with the frequency of grace. And we give gratitude in advance. Thy kingdom, queendom come. Thy will is now being done in this podcast on earth as it is in the highest heavens. Taisha intadoe, Taisha intadoe, Taisha intadoe. Spoken as it is stated now, and so it is done. Rasha Ira Christar. Around this podcast now. Cool. Well, thanks for allowing me to set that frequency. I just want to dive in today with Dr. Stephen Young. So Dr. Stephen Young, for our listeners and our audience here, would love to just kind of dive into your hero's journey. In this lifetime, I know you've had your ancient being, but just some bullet points of what is important for people to understand about Dr. Stephen Young in this particular lifetime, what you've been through and what you're here to do.
Yeah. So I think my first memory of having this inner voice that came to me that sort of was not my normal thinking mind was H5. I remember like playing card games with like my brother and my cousins, and actually my brother like cheated in the game to win. And this voice came to me that was like a deeper, louder voice than my thinking voice. And it said, he's going to have a tough life. And I was like, huh, that's strange. This thought came to me. And so, yeah, since age five, I've learned to sort of trust that voice as it came. And, you know, my parents divorced when I was young at age seven, and we left Taiwan. My mom, a single mother, my brother, who's 5 years older, came to America. And that was a very pivotal moment in sort of in my journey, mainly because one of the reasons that they divorced is they were biting a lot. And I remember walking into a room where they were like physically trying to kill each other. And it was this like shocking moment for my nervous system. I just remember like complete numbness because of just this intense fear and this intense feeling of like my entire sense and foundation of safety was gone. And so that sort of seeded a very important seed. It was like training for me for decades to feel that safety again. And so that was a very, very powerful moment. Yeah. And then came to the States, and, you know, we didn't have any money. We like picked from the trash for furniture and lived in a, like a room with just a bed, no bathroom, no kitchen. And, you know, that was sort of the beginning journeys of my spiritual teachings, I'll call it. And so my mom, you know, had to work like 80 hours a week to make ends meet. And I was a pretty unsupervised child. And so I, you know, would play video games all day and eat like Chips Ahoy and Oreo cookies all day for my nutrition. Really? Yeah. And you can imagine that does not produce a healthy mind and body. And so essentially by age 14, constant allergies, colds all the time, like severe acne. It was just like my physical body was like revolting. And then my mental self just felt so not understood. There was just this extreme loneliness. And then there was this moment where I literally like held a knife, you know, contemplated suicide. And that's when this voice came and said, you know, there's no difference between you, very specific, Martin Luther King, Bill Gates, they just think differently. And so I was like, huh. And so I like dropped a knife and I embarked on this journey where I started reading books. The first book was Psycho-Cybernetics, which was how to program essentially your subconscious mind. And since then, just, you know, I've read countless psychology books, personal development books. And at age 16, a friend gave me the Bhagavad Gita. And so that was like my first spiritual book. And, you know, since then, it's just been a series of these magical breadcrumbs. Like age 19, this janitor at the gym I was working at was like, hey, you know, I think you would like the Landmark Forum. So I went through like the forum education at age 19. And yeah, just started really learning how the mind, the body, and the spirit functions. And, you know, became a doctor of physical therapy, had my own clinic for like 20 years, treated 9,000 patients. And right around age 34, was when I had this incredible experience where I went upstairs in my office to get a massage. And then a minute after the massage, I get this text message. And the text message was, how was your massage? And it was from a friend here in Wimberley, Texas. And so I'm in New Jersey at the time. And of course, I look at my phone. I'm just like, how do you know I just got a massage? And then her answer really like changed my life. And you know, her answer was, your soul told me. And so that's when I was like, wow, there's definitely this undeniable other reality beyond the sciences I've studied. And essentially, it's like real world experience of some of the spiritual stuff I've read about, you know, I meditated on, but that was like an undeniable physical 3D world experience of like, what do you mean my soul told you? And so since then, I've sort of focused most of my studies on alchemy, esoteric sciences, hermetics, shamanism, energy, like sort of the not yet quantifiable side of reality. So,
Yeah, beautiful. So it sounds like what a beautiful hero's journey you've chosen this last time. And we didn't even have breakfast yet. That's like one of my favorite terminologies that I always say. But from the ages even of five, I mean, this is like really kind of like my life's work is that little small voice that you're 5-year-old self was able to hear. It wasn't the mind. It was a direct cellular knowing, an understanding, an intuition. And that voice was with you all the time, but it came to you at five. and it was guiding you and leading you. And through that extreme darkness, he who is forgiven much, who's been without anything, who's been to the loneliness, who's held that knife, can love much. And so you allowed yourself to experience that darkness, the poverty, if you want to call it. And then that voice came back at the age of 14, which is fascinating to me. All you needed to know was that, whoa, MLK, Bill Gates, and me are the same. The only thing that differentiates that is the mental. And somehow that clicked something inside of you to start propelling you onto this path. I know since the age of 14, 15, you've been working out consistently with your mind, body, and spirit. You started going to Cypress, you know, reprogramming the subconscious mind. And then you had that experience, which is very fascinating to me, is when at the age of 34, when you go into that massage, you can get into that brainwave state where your soul or your superconscious mind is online. And when you're in that state, the higher sensory perception of telepathy, which everyone can do, and your friend were doing telepathy when you were in that relaxed state, and she knew that you were, your soul was communicating with hers, soul family, and that you knew that, oh, wow. And so this kind of sparked it, made it real for you. And like, you've been full on. Not only have you seen 9,000 patients and, you know, mastered that, but you've been going full on into the esoteric. And the cool thing is, Dr. Steven, when I meet him, you know, I met him for a tea ceremony a few weeks ago. He's embodied it. So not only has he gone deep into the esoteric sciences, there's one thing about launching, but there's another thing about coming back and bringing that knowledge back into your body and embodying that. So many different things I want to dive into here. One of those things I know that you mentioned there was reprogramming the subconscious mind, the mental, that 14-year-old who believed that, oh, I can change my mind. Can you dive a little bit deeper into that, Dr. Steven, about why that's important, how to do that, and anything coming through there, any wisdom?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I like to remind people, and, you know, these aren't exact numbers, and this is more of a general framework to sort of understand the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. And basically the data based on some published works shows that our conscious mind can process between 8 to 200 bits of information per second, right? So that's sort of our thinking mind. The subconscious mind can process between 200 million to 400 billion bits of information per second. Guess which one's more powerful and which one's really running the show? It's really our subconscious mind. So that's one important context. Another important context is a lot of people ask me, how do you manifest? And my answer always is, when are you not manifesting? You're constantly manifesting. It's your subconscious mind that is manifesting the existing sort of reality based on law of correspondence, which we'll get into. What they really mean is, how do I get my conscious mind and my subconscious mind to be thinking the same thing, basically, right? To desire or manifest the same thing. And so based on that, you know, our subconscious mind does not use words and sentences, because that's our conscious mind. Our subconscious mind actually represents reality and about external in ourselves with metaphors and pictures and movies, right? It doesn't use words. And so I didn't learn this until decades later. In the beginning, the sort of white belt level of programming the subconscious mind was like, all right, when your brain wave is in a slower state, like right before you're about to fall asleep in an alpha state, you can do these affirmations, right? You're basically like using the conscious mind to kind of access the subconscious and program it with these affirmations while you're in this sort of dream state. That was like the initial practice when I was 14. Since then, of course, I've learned a lot more about that process and how there are actually these incredible processes. One of my favorites is called metaphors of movement. You can actually think of any situation in your life, and there's a way to draw the subconscious picture representation of that situation. And there's a whole process you can actually start to play with that picture, and you're literally in real time changing your subconscious relative to that specific situation. It's a very powerful practice, much more advanced than the typical affirmations and apply to like a specific state of mind. And so the metaphors movement allows you to identify very, you know, you can think about a relationship with someone. You could be very specific about, I don't know, your work or where you're going in life, about your health. It could be even very specific about your representation about exercising, right? We can apply to very specific things. And then the other thing, a very general clearing of the subconscious mind that I love is, of course, the Ho'oponopono. right? When we sort of chant that mantra, it's just such an easy, I'm a huge fan of like keeping it simple, easy mantra to basically just clear the subconscious mind. And, you know, as long as it's within a context of, you know, God, I love you. God, I'm sorry I have not recognized your divine love and orchestration in every moment in my life. Please forgive me. Thank you. Right. And so those are some of my favorite processes for just shifting the subconscious mind.
Yeah, amazing. And I just want to reemphasize that this was a big thing for me when Dr. Steven first told me about it. The Ho'oponopono. Oftentimes people believe that we're saying it to somebody else. I'm sorry. Please forgive me, like to people. But actually what Dr. Steven just did was he took that vertical. I'm sorry, divine source, for not seeing you in every single thing, for not seeing God in everything. Please forgive me. And so when you go vertical, you're actually, that is the horizontal, and it's taking care of all of that, and it's clearing the subconscious mind. So for me, ever since we had that conversation, Dr. Steven, I've been doing this Ho'oponopono vertically to God, to source, to all that is, the energetic infrastructure that runs through all things and all people. And for me, that has completely shifted the paradigm of the Ho'oponopono, and it clears everything instead of clearing one thing. And I think that's how it actually got started, when that Hawaiian doctor was actually doing that practice with the psychiatry patients, and he was seeing the patients get better. So just wanted to share that, like that's been a revelation for me to do that vertically, to clear everything, the subconscious mind, you know, vertically. So I think there's really important key points that Dr. Steven touched on here. The conscious mind can only process a fraction of what the subconscious mind is processing. So the real thing that's running the show is the subconscious mind. But the language of the subconscious mind is symbols and things that, you know, we're not very conscious of. So every time we look at a symbol, it's communicating with our subconscious mind, which is running the show. And, you know, Dr. Steven dropped a few clues in there. When you first start beginning to reprogram your subconscious mind, you see how important it might be. Right before you go to sleep and right when you're waking up, there's a magic moment when you're in theta brainwaves, where the app store to the brain is wide open. And practices such as yoga nidra, you can find it on your Spotify. Right before you fall asleep, it goes, I am worthy. And like, that's the main thing, because like a lot of our inner children were brought up to believe that we have to do something to feel worthy. Yeah. But it's reprogramming our subconscious mind to believe that. And then I love what Dr. Steve was talking about, metaphors of movement, which I'm not, you know, I think like from what I can understand, symbology and vision boards and things like this to communicate and align the subconscious with the conscious to and then to clear it with the Ho'oponopono. So Dr. Steven just, you know, literally just laid out how to clear it, how to reprogram it in very many steps, and why it's important. And that's huge, because the universe is mental. And Dr. Steven's actually an expert at hermetics. And so maybe we can dive into that. You know, I know you've studied hermetics, and I know you've probably had a past life there and things like this. Can you take us into the law of hermetics and the mentalism and how that anything coming through there?
Sure. Yeah, just, you know, for those listeners and viewers that are not familiar with these hermetic laws, these are documented things. This isn't like mythology, right? There's been these emerald tablets. In fact, Sir Isaac Newton, who we know as a physicist, was the one that translated the original language on the emerald tablets to English. And many of the scientists, right, that we know were also alchemists. They all studied, you know, hermetics, and mainly because hermetics is the bridge and harmony of science and spirituality in one. And when you study these hermetics, there is no middleman. There is no, if this, then you are spiritual. The study is, in fact, the spiritual, if that makes sense. There's no middleman. And so what I found is that when you first understand these hermetic laws, life becomes infinitely peaceful. Because you now understand how reality works. Nothing is crazy. Nothing is weird. You just go, got it. This is because of that, right? So it gives you such inner peace. And then when you start to live as the laws, when you're starting to combine these separate laws into one, what ends up happening is they actually start to either magnify or cancel each other out. And when you do these laws that essentially trap you in the 3D plane in duality, when they start to cancel each other out, they also are the key to unlock you from the trap, right? They're the lock and the key in itself. And another metaphor I can offer is when you start to live as and from the laws, you are accessing the source code of the game or simulation or the reality that we're in. So instead of playing the game better, you're actually the programmer of the game, right? That's the power of these hermetic laws, just to give people the context. And so there's these seven simple laws. There's a law of polarity, which means everything has opposites. And the law of polarity is one of the most useful laws to see what I call the totality of reality, right? In personal development, in psychology, and spirituality, they talk about the shadow. That essentially is the lesser aware aspect of our thoughts, our intentions, and our identities. And understanding the law of polarity automatically reveals the shadow in real time. Right. And so you're seeing the light and the dark constantly. And it's like 100% light, 100% dark that you're aware constantly. So that's the advantage of the law of polarity. The law of rhythm just states that everything in the universe swings back and forth. Right. And so the applicable understanding of that in life is most of our problems that we have in life is simply because we are keeping either a previous idea or story or identity still. We're not allowing it to move. Or we have a desire in the future still and not allowing it to move, right? If we just allow stories and desires to move, most of our problems basically dissolve, right? And then there's the law of mentalism. As you mentioned, the universe is mind, right? It's called the one mind, and everything comes from thought. And so the power of our every thought is literally influencing all of reality, not just like stuff in our lives. And then there's the law of vibration, which, from a horizontal understanding, the law of vibration states that everything is one. We're just a sea of vibrating molecules, right? We have language like chair, desk, computer, self, but technically same protons, neutrons, electrons, and quarks that are just vibrating at different frequencies. Now, there's a vertical component to this as well, which is my favorite, which is we have language like hand, right? The molecules in my hand. And think of it as, and these are arbitrary numbers, if my hand is vibrating at 10 hertz, let's say, I would call it my physical hand. And maybe at 20 hertz, I might call it spirit. And maybe at 30 hertz, we might call it source or God, right? And so we recognize that we are actually one and the same of these spiritual terms. They're not some other entity or some other place to get to. It's in fact us just vibrating at different frequencies. And that's a very different context. Then there's this other thing we need to get to, right? It's like, oh, no, we are spirit, we are source, we are everything. It's just, you know, the higher dimensional frequency vibrating aspects of the self. And so, and then that's the law of vibration. There's the law of cause and effect. Everything is input and output. And what's really interesting is if you apply the law of cause and effect outside of the reality of time and space, what we start to realize is that previous lives, or another way to, that's the timeline way to say it. The non-time way to say it is another dimensional aspect of ourselves are actually impacting us, just like we are impacting another dimensional aspect of ourselves, right? So we want to expand the understanding of law and cause and effect beyond our existing timeline in this life. When you can hold that frequency, there's this deep awareness, like your consciousness is able to connect these dots that you were not aware of. Additional dots show up for your consciousness to connect, basically. So that's the law of cause and effect. There's the law of gender. Everything has a masculine and feminine component to it, or another way to say it is sun and moon, right? Penetrating and receiving energy, light and dark, awareness and ether, right? Where all things come from, sort of that play, that polarity. And then, of course, I always say the last law is the law of correspondence. As above, so below, as within, so without. It is my sort of favorite hermetic law, mainly because it really shows us that our external life, everything that you are experiencing, is an exact replica of your internal, right? And so the real application in language with the law of correspondence, a lot of people will say, you make me angry, or you make me happy. In actuality, it's more like the anger in me is becoming aware within myself through this external scene that I am generating, or the happiness in me is becoming aware within myself through this external scene that I am generating. That's actually what's happening. And so it just becomes a very powerful shift in our language and awareness, because it gets rid of the victim perpetrator duality, right? We are literally projecting the holographic field. We're collapsing the infinite wave into matter, right? And then we are experiencing that matter, you know. And as I'm saying matter, I want to tie it back to, for sure, from childhood, we spend our whole lives earning matter, earning worth, basically, you know. And one of my practices I love to do is, like, because it's like a subconscious programming, is to imagine, you know, when you were a child, just sitting there drooling, like spacing out, and your parents come over and hug you and go, good job, right? You're basically being rewarded for just like being and doing nothing, right? And it's just a powerful image and scene to kind of add into your experience. And I also, you know, from a wordplay perspective, I joke with people, we spend our lifetime trying to matter, but the moment we were conceived, we went from infinite wave of possibility into physical matter. We were 100% matter the moment we were conceived, trying to matter more, which is just a fun, silly thing to realize. So,
yeah, I love that. And so, you know, literally, since we were born, you know, it's like what we signed up for: infinite possibility becoming matter, and then matter trying to matter more until the ages of 0 to 7. We receive patterns of how we receive love from our parents, and we need this love. So this little kid goes out there trying to matter and trying to earn this love until you come and you learn the laws of the universe. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think that, you know, it's really important. Like, you know, some people call it I don't want to call it a video game. I call it the most epic love story ever written, a holographic projection of source, which we all signed up for. And if we're going to be here to really understand the language of the laws of the universe, right? Oh, wow. Then it can help me step out of victim mode. It can help me realize, whoa, we are all one. It can help me realize, like, actually, it's my anger. It's not their anger. It's my anger. And then actually, it can also eventually help me say, what you have done unto the least of them, you have done unto me. Oh, when I'm actually helping someone else, it's impossible for me to help someone else without helping myself. Yeah. It's because once I understand, and then the laws of the rhythm of the universe, the rhythm of my heartbeat. And so I think, you know, it just makes life easier, as Dr. Steven said, not only easier, but like more understandable, more comprehensible, and more engageable when you understand these hermetic principles and found in the Emerald Tablets, transcribed by, I think you said, Sir Isaac Newton, right? So, yeah, I think it's an important part to understand these laws of the universe. With that being said, I want to kind of dive in now into kind of my hobby these days. People say, like, what are your hobbies, Sam? And I'm like, well, on my days off, I like to geek out and go try out new technology, new spiritual technology, new healing technology. Like, this is what I love doing. Like, and so I think like 4 or 5 years ago, I tried out before a mortal machine was complete. It was like in the test phases. I sat on it and I laid down and I was like, whoa, they combined a lot of these different technologies all in one. Little did I know that you were the brains and the creative force behind this. And here I meet you later. So would love to kind of delve into the immortal machine. What is it? Just whatever. I would love to learn more about it.
Yeah. So I'm always a huge fan of like identifying the seed frequency, right? So the origin intention of everything is really helpful to sort of identify. And so the origin frequency, the original intention that eventually became the Immortal Chamber, was simply to help people heal faster, right? At the time, I still had my clinic, I was treating patients, and I was like, hey, how do I combine different technologies together to help them through their current symptoms faster, essentially? And so at first, mm-hmm. we had like a pulse electromagnetic field mat device. And then we saw definitely reduced inflammation, you know, faster healing. Then, you know, eventually I stacked red and near infrared lights on top of it. So the person was like in a sandwich, like below them was the PEMF mat, above them was the red and infrared light. And then we saw faster healing. And then, you know, I added hydrogen gas to the process, and that dramatically accelerated the healing. And so flash forward, 5 years later from doing all of that, and this is now 4.5 years ago, my business partner, Brian at Immortal. And at the time, we were actually not designing the chamber. We were designing a workstation that this idea came to me where you actually become more healthy while you're on the computer, just completely shifting the paradigm. So we were really excited. He came down to my office. We were kind of working on some things. And then he basically tried the contraption that I rigged up for my patients. And when he came out, he literally said he felt like he rested for a week after 30 minutes from being in it. And then immediately, because of his genius business brain, he was like, we need to make this the first product, right? And so, and as we did, he really and the rest of the team evolved that technology from the initial three to what it is now. And so it is light years evolved compared to that original intention. And so now, instead of the PEMF, which is a pulse electromagnetic field, which has high amounts of magnetic energy and a little bit of electrical energy, we were able to meet someone that was able to tap into Nikola Tesla's consciousness. This guy's been tapping into the Akasha records for 45 years, and he developed a sort of PEF machine, which is very high amounts of electrical energy and very low amounts of magnetic energy. So we added that into the chamber, and it was so new. It actually took us about, I think, $1.2 million to figure out how to add that and have that power play well with the other technologies. And that was a huge, that it was like a 2 year process to figure it out. But it is the most powerful aspect of the chamber because this energy allows every cell in your body, the cellular membrane holds a charge. It's almost like every cell in your body has a battery, basically. And through life, and through stressors and through, poor nutrition and through, we'll call it, repeated mental thoughts and emotions that are dense, right? That drains that energy. And this is all scientific now. We can see, they can measure the cellular voltage. And what they actually know is that when the cellular voltage decreases, not only does a cell not function normally, that cell can no longer communicate with the other cells that have regular voltage. It basically isolates itself. It's isolated. And when that cell isolates, it actually starts to freak out. It goes into survival mode and it starts to replicate itself, which we would call cancer. And so this device literally restores a charge in the battery of every cell in your body so that it has normal, harmonious communication. And the law correspondence as the how our cells work is how the universe and how all of humanity works, right? When we get all the cells to talk to each other and they operate as a community, it thrives. When the cells are isolated, they don't thrive and they're not healthy, right? Just like humanity. And not only that, it puts every frequency of nature from 5 hertz to 5,000 hertz into your body all at the same time. So there's that electrical charge component, and then there's the frequency component because we're a bunch of vibrating molecules, right? And so it's literally putting every frequency into your system and giving your system its own sovereignty to take whatever frequency it needs in that moment for its own thriving, nature, basically. Right. In other words, instead of a lot of technologies will pick specific frequencies for you to do something to you, we decided to put every frequency in and allow your spirit, soul, higher consciousness, subconscious, whatever is choosing the frequency it needs in the moment, right? Just giving you sovereignty. It's got that. Then, of course, we have the red light, the near infrared lights. The near infrared lights, in the final production models are able to flash at a unique frequency. It's been shown to boost your mitochondrial count by like 40% and boost mitochondrial efficiency by up to 60%, which these are massive numbers, right? It's like, again, more energy for your cells. And then eventually we're adding the capability where through voice analysis, the near infrared lights will start to do acupuncture to your system to restore the meridian or chi flow of your body. So we have all that plus the hydrogen gas, which is the most powerful antioxidant. Right, the duality, law of polarity of life is that when we breathe oxygen to live to make ATP, we also make free radicals that causes cellular damage. But the cellular damage in minute amounts is good because it's from a biological perspective what explains evolution, right? Small mutations in DNA, but too much of it causes accelerated aging, cancer, inflammation, and all the things. And so hydrogen is one of the most powerful free radical scavengers, right? Antioxidants that you can put into your system. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, we have vibration and we have sound. And those two are essentially designed to put your nervous system in complete rest and digest and away from that fight or flight state, right? And so what happens is when you're in this chamber, your nervous system just fully relaxes and it puts your brain in that slower brainwave state for it to fully receive all of the other technologies together. And so this is why we've seen anything from the lowest or least benefit that people report is flow state. They're just in that flow state, right? Which is alert but calm. And we've seen chronic pain disappear. And by the way, all this is one session, not a series of sessions. So mm-hmm. flow state, 3 years of chronic pain gone. We've seen childhood repressed memories surfacing, processing, somatically releasing. We've seen roughly about 15% of people will say it was more profound than any psychedelic experience. And we've also seen, and we can't scientifically explain this in a way, but a child with a genetic disorder of low muscle tone reversed itself after one treatment or one session. So some pretty powerful. Yeah.
So the sound and that light, man, it's just like getting people into that receptivity. And the sound and light is also communicating. And in that receptive state, then the near infrared light goes to work, right? And it's decreasing inflammation, and inflammation is the cause of all disease. When there's low cell volume, the cellular energy, that's when cancer happens. It starts replicating. So it's actually increasing through that, project you guys worked on for 2 years. Instead of sending mainly magnetic, it's sending mainly electric, which is literally restoring the cellular energy, which is causing the cells to vibrate at a higher frequency, which is causing all the cells to communicate. And when they're all communicating within, it's all happening without as well, which is causing external connection as well, eventually, because when we're in this flow state and when our cells are all communicating, then we're more able to connect with other people, and isolation leads to inflammation, which is the cause of all disease. So one sitting on this is your cellular energy is increasing. And as that increases, then we can start connecting with our tribe when we're in flow state and when we're connected within. And so that's really profoundly beautiful. And then the hydrogen comes through. And the hydrogen is like you said, you explained it better than I, a free oxygen scavenger, and it's decreasing that and repairing the cells as well right there, and the mitochondria, and then increasing, there's another component that increases the mitochondria. So you're getting energy many, many, many different ways here. Yeah. And communicating, repairing the DNA, and giving the cellular energy, and getting into flow state. And and in that state, I guess, just like your 5 year old little boy had when he was relaxed, or when your 34 year old self had when he was relaxed, you get into that relaxed state where that soul energy can come through and heal. It can not only heal, it can also give profound experiences, such as 15% of the people are saying, even more profound than a psychedelic experience. And that's one sitting. So this is exciting, brother.
Yeah, what's interesting is, so again, law of correspondence, micro and macro. When a person gets in, their cells mm-hmm. are being charged so that the cells are starting to basically operate more in a harmonious community. And then as each person gets into the chamber and their entire system is being charged, it allows that person and everyone else in that community that's going to the chamber to operate more harmoniously in a community, right? So it's this fractal, as above, so below, micro is the macro effect. It was here in Austin back last year in March, and I had this epiphany. I was like, oh my God, I totally underestimated the impact of the chamber, because I always thought whoever gets in, it's obviously going to have a profound effect. But I totally forgot that you can imagine in a community, if 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 people are getting to the chamber on a regular basis, and they're all now coming out operating from this relaxed, open, heart-centered, connected, energetically charged state, that they are forming, it's like the Maharishi effect. They're going to impact tens of thousands of people based on that synergistic, harmonious, communal vibration versus just one person. And so that was the really exciting moment in all of this, is like, oh my God, I totally underestimated the impact that it's going to have.
Yeah, I love that, because if you get one of these machines into a community and intentionally use it to build community in that relaxed, harmonious, connected state, and combine it into one intention for that group. Because that's how like every revolution on earth has ever started, is when two, three, four people come together, 12 people come together with a common intention for the highest good of humanity, and they get into that state where it's a synergy, it's about the highest good, and it's about flow state. And then so like, yeah, like I'm also thinking quantumly, because you get one group who does that, then that is also in the quantum field, where groups around the world can now start tuning and plugging in. And that's how that revolution, that love revolution, can really begin. And so, yeah, that's exciting to be able to utilize this technology in an intentional communal way. So for those listeners out there who are resonating and they want to actually experience the immortal, is there any way for them to do that?
Yeah. We've sold, I believe, 19 chambers so far from launching last April. And we're fundraising right now to increase production volume, because the demand is there. We can't make it fast enough, basically. It was actually a production backlog. But right now we have chambers. We'll have one here in Austin in 2 months. There's one in Denver. There's two in Vegas. There's a few in Miami. There's some in the Vancouver area. And I'm sure there's more. If people go on just immortal, immortal.com, we'll have a section with where they are throughout the country. We're in the rollout process, and it's exciting. In fact, I just talked to someone recently that's in Australia. They want to get one and create a health clinic with, the chamber and some other technologies. And here's the most exciting part. The guy's like, hey, I made unlimited amounts of money. I want to give back. And he's Filipino. And he's like, I'm in Sydney now. I'm going to proof of concept this. We're going to collect data on the impact of health of people as they go through this clinic we're setting up. And then he's like, we're going to open hundreds of clinics like this in the Philippines where it's free. People go in for free. Yeah. And this is really exciting. What I'm seeing in the world. And I've had so many multiple calls of like, I've made unlimited amounts of money. I've amassed stuff and resources. Where do I give it to help and change the world? This is the vortex we're in right now. So,
And there was some quote you said on Facebook. I don't remember. It's something about source and resources. With the deeper you connect to source, the deeper the resources also start. And that is one of my favorite prayers is, my one and only pure desire is eternal at one moment with source and its divine eternal truth and divine eternal splendor. And if and when I'm embodying that, every other lesser desire, I'm at one with everything, but not attached to anything. So that's why in the Philippines, don't matter where it's from, every channel is open and receptive to that at one moment with all, but unattached to anything. So, man, that's exciting. That's really exciting. God bless Philippines, man, and may these machines. Bless that country. Beautiful. With that being said, I'm going to get a little bit woo-woo. I know you threw an event called Master Woo-Woo before. And, I want to talk a little bit, delve into Atlantis and Atlantean technology and kind of that timeline and this timeline. And anything coming through for you about Atlantis and Atlantis Rising and anything you want to share about that?
So much. Where to begin? First I'll sort of give context. A lot of people conceptualize Atlantis as the lost city under the sea, right? Atlantis really was a time period of humanity. It wasn't just one location, right? It existed for thousands of years. And so and during that time, there was just a lot of technological advancements. However, the scientists back then were of the mindset of let's just progress technology for more advancement and more power. And they did not choose human life and love was basically not as valued as the technological advancement. And so because of that, it led to some destructions and some things. And so, but the technology is now coming back. I've had so many people just in my sort of circle of peers and friends who are starting to have full memories of their times during Atlantis. And so we work with some incredible guides and teachers that have helped us on some missions, and they make Atlantean technology. And so there's a few ways, you know, I have different camps. So I have people that are basically channeling the scientists, their ascended masters at this point, that live during times of Atlantis, that will give them direct instructions on how to build Atlantean technology. And, you know, I'm actually sitting next to some. This is a piece of Atlantean technology, right? It's a lotus. I don't have it on, but when the light turns on, it refracts light beams away from this gold and silver, which is called electrum. Electrum is gold and silver bonded together, and it represents sun and moon, right? Harmony of masculine and feminine. And when the light particles bounces off the sort of the gold and silver and goes into the lotus crystal and bounces into the room, it's basically charging the room with higher consciousness, right? It's literally elevating the consciousness and the energy of the room. And that's an example of Atlantean technology. I also have behind me on the altar, you know, crystal swords with lasers. And then you can use the laser with your intention to send energy into an object or into space using some of this, again, Atlantean technology. And so, and that's from someone who channels an ascended master. You know, I'm wearing this bracelet here, right, which is called a Selfica. And this is from Daman Herds, a spiritual community in Italy. And they also work with Atlantean technology. And how they're able to understand or obtain this Atlantean technology is they basically built a time machine. And they were time traveling, have been time traveling back to Atlantis and Lemuria and Puri to get some of that technological information into the now. And they've built basically different technologies. And so, and this is happening all over. I'm sure there's tons I'm not even aware of. There is this calling for the return or the Atlantis rising, because we are reaching an inflection point similar to, you know, just before the Great Flood, basically, where, you know, like CERN is smashing particles together to open portals to other dimensions. We're reaching an interesting time of technologically. Everyone's talking about AI and the impact of AI, but we're literally molecularly affecting time and space with technology. This is huge. And so many of us have incarnated in this lifetime to make sure that this time we make it through as we infuse the love of life and all of reality and compassion into this entire process. So that's sort of my general synopsis of Atlantean and Atlantis and Atlantean technology.
Yeah, that's a very comprehensive and important, from my perspective, summary of Atlantis. According to my perspectives, 100% absolutely. Also meeting brothers and sisters who are bringing in this Atlantean technology. In some of my ceremonies, I'm seeing beyond space or time. People are flying in on a spaceship, and Atlantis is celebrating. So there is a timeline where Atlantis has not sunk or fallen. And to Dr. Stephen's point, yeah, it was a big landmass. And according to certain perspectives, in 28,000 BC, you know, there was a group there in the priest caste who was running, instead of love and light, and which is, you know, balance, they were running like power for greed, need, and with these technologies, running these experiments on the crystal core and running, you know, kind of pooling resources from the earth. And yeah, there were two explosions that happened, 28,000 BC, as well as 9,500 something BC. And Atlantis, most of the island did sink. But before that, it was a thriving civilization with amazing technology. And even this gold and silver that Dr. Stephen is talking about, actually, there were 144 elements, not 121 that we read about on, you know, in chemistry class, the periodic table. No, there were 144. 12 times 12 is 144. And element 126 was the gold and silver one, which Dr. Stephen and his team are now like bringing back. And like these elements are important because once to restore our eternal life potential, we have to restore our elements because we are the elements. And there's 144 of them, and it's a mathematical code. And so all of these technologies coming back, I think Dr. Stephen really nailed it on the head. It's like infusing love and light into the technology, because these technologies are amazing and powerful. But I think the main most powerful thing that perhaps sometimes in Atlantean times that some of those priest castes might have forgotten is infusing the technology and making sure that we infuse it with love. and light, and with that intention, because that is what really propels the technology to be healing, to be sustainable, and to be in alignment with source. And so, yeah, it's a fascinating time, and I agree. A lot of us have come back, and we are here, and to recreate that timeline in a more kind of aligned way. Beautiful. I know, Dr. Stephen, you took a recent pilgrimage to go see the Kogi, the Kogi tribe. Would love to kind of, if you could share about your experience there and what's been coming through with that experience.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Last March, I just got a message from a friend. She's like, hey, you know, I'm going to Colombia to visit the Kogi. And immediately, I didn't know anything, no details. It was an immediate yes. I was like, yep. And literally on the way there, flying to Colombia, I still had no idea what we were doing. I didn't realize we were going on a spiritual pilgrimage and doing, you know, these sacred sites and places on the earth. I had no idea. In fact, I didn't even realize, you know, I like went there a day early. She's like, oh, you know, we need to book a hotel room for tonight. That's not part of the trip. I was like, oh, literally like booking on the way there. And so when I arrived, what's interesting is the first night I was asked by the main facilitator that organized the experience to facilitate something at dinner. And then as I was speaking, again, this inner awareness came to me and it said, many of us came for a specific intention, right? To get something from this experience. But the main benefit will have almost nothing to do with the intention. That's what I was being told to share with someone. And so, you know, for me, once I found out, wow, it's incredible, we're going to go on a spiritual pilgrimage, which means, so just to give context for people, the Kogi, they're the indigenous people of Colombia. So when the Spanish went and conquered, the Kogi, instead of fighting, they basically just went up higher and higher in the Sierra Nevada mountains to live by themselves, right? And so they've lived isolated and away from Western influence for like thousands of years. And we were with three of their shamans, which they call the mamos, and some of their students. There were nine of them, I believe. And they took us to eight sacred sites in the area where they've been going to for thousands of years to what they would call make payments to Mother Earth, because humans have been taking resources from Mother Earth and they want to harmonize and balance it all out by making payments, right? And so we were with them to these incredible sacred sites, and they would, you know, use cotton or corn or seashells, just, you know, natural things. And it was this very ritualistic process to, again, like offer energy essentially to nourish Mother Earth. And during the pilgrimage, there was a profound fireside chat. Like, we were around the campfire. It was one of the last days, and they shared with us their prophecy that they've been seeing for years. And their prophecy was that between now and June 22nd of 2024, this year, they said, unless we nourish Mother Earth with more nourishing thoughts, and the thoughts are, and our emotions are basically like food or the energy of Mother Earth. And, you know, through the law of correspondence, this all makes sense, because while we have words like earth, self, universe, it's all one and the same, right? And so how we're vibrating, of course, is affecting the vibration of Mother Earth. And so they said, unless we nourish Mother Earth with more nourishing thoughts, Mother Earth will take it upon herself to sort of restore her own self at the expense of human lives. And in their words, which was, you know, translated from Kogi to Spanish to English, their word was human extinction in 15 years unless we make a big effort to nourish Mother Earth with more nourishing thoughts. And then they also said these two powerful, or these, this powerful phrase, which is, we have no enemies. And what I felt was that they spoke those words verbally, but telepathically they were communicating that we get to shift away from fear, fight, and force to love, unity, and compassion, right? And so that was a profound awareness for the group. And then one of the attendees of the group is the person that runs the Pachamama Alliance. And he, interestingly, 2 weeks prior to the pilgrimage, realized that while they'd done incredible things for the indigenous people, they've, you know, protected like 100 million acres in the Amazon, they work with like 30 different indigenous people all over the world to sort of help protect their lands, but still Mother Earth is not trending in a healthy, favorable way. So he recognizes that they needed a pivot. And so during the trip, we kind of bonded and we're, you know, working together to help essentially pivot this massive organization with tremendous reach away from activism, which is fighting, right? It's like protecting the land. It's a fight, fear, force energy. And so it's about shifting that to love and unity. And so, yeah, I've embarked on this journey of supporting them. And then we're planning for like this incredible gathering in early June from the 3rd to the 7th, 100 world leaders together to strategize on a new plan for all of humanity and then execute that plan and meet again in December. And so what came out of this was, I think because of this incredible grand mission, I literally have been living in this perpetual vortex since December. Like literally every 3 to 4 days, I am meeting someone, talking to someone that is meant to be a part of this mission that, you know, yeah, it's like things are manifesting. It's like beyond manifesting. Things are coming into my awareness that I can't even ask for. I don't even know how to ask for it, but it's exactly what's needed for this mission. That's what's happening in my life right now. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And what an important mission, you know, and yeah, the Kogi tribe, the Mamos, are the ones who have spent that time in the darkness, who have been literally reciprocal energy exchanging with Pachamama. Because yeah, there are a lot of people and forces out there that take. And on behalf of that, they've been giving the energy to the sacred spots, which are all connected underneath the earth. And when they give that sacred energy, like everything is connected like an internet network, it spreads out and it sustains the bones of Mother Earth, the mountains of Mother Earth, the water of Mother Earth, her blood. And so they've been doing that for many, many, many years. And usually, from what I understand, like I stayed in a Burning Man one time with a Mamo, actually, the elder from, I stayed with him in the trailer. And what I understand is they just started to come out to humanity. They had messages and they were just doing this work in private, but they received the message. It's time now. You need to send this message out to humanity, because if humanity doesn't wake up like it was prophesied and shown, there is a timeline in about 15 years where Mother Earth is going to, you know, and this has happened before. This is like history repeats itself unless we learn from the past. There have been three extinctions, if you want to call it. And from my awareness and understanding, the third seeding of the original celestial human beings is the last one, from what I understand. And so there comes this time, and it's not urgent because we're shifting. I love that. No enemies. This old thing of protect, right? Instead of protect, connect. Love, unity, connection. And we're shifting that. And as soon as you accepted kind of this commission, if you want to call it, from the councils, as well as, you know, from Mother Earth, everything that you need for this mission has been coming through right on divine right timing, harmony, and order. And it's an important mission. And so with that being said, I know, how does that tie into, if at all, astrogeomancy? I know that's a word that has been coming up. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, early January, the people with the Pachamama Alliance connected me to Walter, who is the landowner in this incredible sacred land in Ecuador called Finca Sagrada. And the Kogi have actually designated this land to be like the main cosmic portal connecting Earth to the cosmos. And so I was on a call with them and they had mentioned that, oh, they're having this person come on their sacred land to teach astrogeomancy. And as soon as I heard that word, I was given this image of like the original lines of architecture of, you know, our physical environment that kept us in harmony with spirit and with the entire universe. And it was sort of lost slash taken away from us. And now's the time to bring it back. So I recognize like the importance of this astrogeomancy thing. And so I was, of course, an immediate yes, I'm going to go in and learn this course. And now basically I'm helping set up a camera crew to record the content. And the idea is to eventually be able to offer this as an online course for all of humanity, because this is the universal mathematical science of sound and physical space in terms of how to design things. Actually, I'll give more concrete examples. I was on a masterclass with a teacher. He showed us how the lines of Stonehenge were the same lines of how capitals of different countries were the same angles. It's the same angles that show up in our anatomical body. It's the same angles that kind of show up in our cells, all the same. And so, and then on a follow-up call, he was saying something along the lines of, you know, on your birthday, the way the sun comes into your house or apartment, wherever you're living, the way the sun comes in at the angle it comes in when the sun rises on your birthday is an important variable to consider as you orchestrate and design how your room is laid out. Like, it's down to that type of actionable how, essentially, if you can orient your room wherever you're at based on how the sun is entering your living quarters on your birthday, what happens is, the way he would put it is, your physical environment is a container that allows your soul slash spirit to be in harmony with source, universe, and all of reality. I mean, that's, to me, like, pretty incredible wisdom to have that's very actionable for like every human on the planet.
Yeah, powerful. Yeah, and the universe is mathematical. And back to the Hermetic laws, everything is mathematical. Base 12 eternal life code, as within, so without, as below, so above. So yeah. These lines that you are being shown, perhaps on the grid lines, the brain of Mother Earth, where electromagnetic frequency, whoever controls the ley lines controls the frequency of what is being distributed on Earth. And there's been a long, 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 long history of Mother Earth. And there are certain stars, if you want to call it, you know, people call them star seeds. Some people's souls or spirits have spent time in Lyra constellation, Orion constellation, Andromeda constellation, Pallades constellation. You know, and you start remembering these origins. And there's been a lot of kind of, if you want to say, fucking with the math of source, the eternal life code of source. And as we rewrite the Earth on one of the most sacred cosmic portals of all of Mother Earth, as we drop codes through this into the core of Mother Earth, what's happening below is also happening above. So I gotta do it. Why don't we rewrite the stars? Because there are timelines where these stars have not fallen, where there's a timeline where Lyra has not exploded. And there is a timeline, and our souls remember this. And some of us are on contract to literally do this. And this is the most important work. I mean, listen, just Dr. Steven is an example, and take what resonates, leave what doesn't. But, you know, he committed to, you know, how can I say, the hero's journey, right? 14, mentalism, learn how to reprogram his subconscious mind. And then he worked out consistently for 25 years. He got his physical vessel right, right? And then after that, like, he treated 9,000 patients. And then after that, like, he said, okay, it's time to give back to humanity. And he created, you know, had fun and created this machine, which has so much amazing potential to help humanity, literally. And then after that, all of that, boom, it comes down to, at the end of the spiritual path, for me personally, that one of the highest forms of service to humanity is exactly this, astrogeomancy and sacred grid work. In fact, the true Jeshua, the true J12 level avatar people call Jesus, not the biblical one, but, like, you know, what was him and his crew? They were actually doing grid work. They came to drop in specific codes, because when you drop in these codes to specific sacred sites, it allows a quantum potential for all of humanity now to have access to these codes. Because when you drop it into sacred crystals underneath the earth, it lifts the frequency of the crystals. They were doing that in Atlantis, but with the wrong frequencies. And you lift it and you lift it, and then it lifts into the ley lines, and the ley lines, the brain of Mother Earth, spreads these frequencies. And so right now, the battle is for these sacreds. And no, there's no battle, because it's love, unity, and compassion, no enemies. But these sacred grid points, when we activate them, it lifts the frequency of Mother Earth, and we're giving back to Mother Earth. We're restoring her crystals. We're restoring her heart, her Schumann resonance. We're restoring her water, restoring her lava, we're restoring. And so I just wanted to kind of reflect that back. Like, the end of all of this is the sacred grid work of lifting the frequency of Mother Earth, so that our children have fresh water and a new earth and systems that are just and fair to grow up on. And so this astrogeomancy course in Ecuador, bringing these powerful people together and recording it and gifting this to humanity, is just wanted to emphasize how important that is with this potential 15-year-old timeline that the Kogi have prophesied. It's time now to give back, seeing to the ley lines. You know, you carry codes, you know, restore your, heal your DNA so you can heal the Earth's DNA. We're all connected, especially to Mother Earth. And yeah, beautiful. Okay, I also wanted to kind of delve in. You've done a lot of work with archetypes. You know, this is, I think, one, the 50 inning strand is the archetypal mind. And you've also kind of the sacred king, the divine warrior, the lover, the magician, the alchemist, right? And can you take us a little bit into the archetypes, and especially as a man in today's modern day and age, why it's important to integrate them and how to do that?
Yeah, I think, I believe that now more than ever, we, especially as men, really have this incredible duty and honor to fully embody all the archetypes and recognize that, you know, the Dahmerhurtians would use these words. If there's existence in life, there's also non-existence or non-life. And these forces are always dancing, right? It's just the law of polarity in this 3D plane. And know that there is this other energy that is wanting us to not fully embody these archetypes while we get to embody. That's the play. It's like playing hide and seek with ourselves, basically. So that's the context. And what I see, you know, energetically, biologically, and even mechanically, if you notice, if you look at science, if you look at men's sperm count and testosterone levels in the last few decades, it is drastically plummeting, right? So we're seeing the biological aspect of how our warrior and our king energy and archetype is being biologically somehow reduced, right? And it's, you know, one could maybe call coincidence that most of the plastics and pesticides are estrogen based that is having this biological impact on humans everywhere. And also in the spiritual slash personal development space and in the media, right? Any aggression is being labeled as like toxic masculinity. And so there is a psychological programming of like, avoid that force and that aggression side of you. And so a lot of men in the personal development space and the spirituality space are going to your tantric practices and being vulnerable. They're essentially going into the lover and magician archetypes and really not developing the warrior and their king archetype. Right. And especially here in Austin and really for the rest of the world, I hear a lot of like, you know, where are the strong men? Like, where are the manly men that can like go out there and like fight for their family? Right. Because most of the men in the spiritual space are going into the tantric ecstatic dance. And there's nothing wrong with it. There's just another half that gets to be developed. Right. Just sort of painting the picture of the current situation. Mm. And so I believe more important now than ever before, we do get to step fully into our warrior archetype, right? Because without the warrior and king, we can't have a revolution. We can't like change a bunch of things. It is fun to be in a lover magician where you're playing with energy and you're alchemizing things and you're expressing your feelings and you're going to your inner child. That's all great. But we also want to honor the warrior and the king. And so, you know, I myself sort of recognized this in 2021 when I was leading the mission to Egypt, right? We were going into the King's Chamber, which is a pretty energetically powerful place with a lot of stuff going on, to send love into the collective consciousness, and had this inner awareness that I needed more help and support in stepping into my own warrior and king archetype. And I worked with a coach that's basically, that's her gift, right? Even just reading her Facebook content, you're getting codes to become that much more aware of your warrior and king archetype. She's incredible. And so it was one of the most important works or coaching sort of being receiving of that coaching ever, because I could not discern. It was, you know, it's like you don't know what you don't know. I didn't know how I was so not connected to the warrior and king archetype until I got that coaching. Right. Because again, I myself was so used to that lover magician because, you know, alchemy and studying all the esoterics and all the things, that was one of the greatest development or soul evolution years of my life, you know, working with her. And so I think for many men, I would say, one, it's not about not showing force. It's about complementing force with love. Right. I think there's a lot of energy that's like wanting men to suppress an aggression or a force. It's not about suppressing. It's about actually showing it, but harmonized with love and compassion. Right. There's that. And then from the king archetype, so that's the warrior. And then from the king archetype, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunities for men to expand their concept of kingdom. most people would say their kingdom is their family, their business, right? Their community. But we're being called to expand our concept of kingdom to all of reality. Every molecule in the universe is our kingdom, right? And so, and there's, you know, some people call it divine king or grail king. And basically what we're saying is all of consciousness is our kingdom. And so from that place, we're being initiated. If you are purely serving your own 3D plane kingdom, which might be like your business and your family, we're being initiated to that divine king or the grail king. And now we're basically serving source slash universe slash God, whichever term resonates with you, right? We're basically being like the full embodiment of the divine will. That's the energy of the divine king, the full embodiment of divine will. And there's a lot of this energy that is coming down, and we're going to see and feel and experience a lot of this year.
Yeah. And no accidents why it's happening at this time. With that being said, so I think like a lot of the spiritual community, like you said, is currently in that tantra, lover, alchemist type of energy, and understanding this 15 year kind of, you know, potential, you know, timeline, as well as the importance of kingdom, as well as what, you know, kind of what wants to be birthed. What has been some practical ways to kind of start really moving from the, if you want to say, lover and magician into a kind of balancing that into the warrior? And how does that practically kind of look like? Any practical ideas for people who are feeling and resonating that? And they're like, yo, I want to do that consciously.
Yeah. You know, the lover and magician will live in this, everything is flow, right? Like whatever comes your way, which is needed. 100% that. But what's missing is the other 100%, which is you set a goal, you commit to it. Even if your leg's going to be cut off as you're doing it, you're going to get it done, right? That energy. And so, and you can apply that to so many things. Because there is this like almost concept that if it's hard, it must mean that God source doesn't want us to do it. That's not always the case, right? Hmm. Maybe it's hard because that's part of your initiation into your warrior archetype even more. And so my practical suggestion is always check in with your inner self as you are in this place of stillness, as you are in the full embodiment of already complete worth and safety. In that space, check in, is this direction for me? And if that direction is a yes, and it requires the utmost devotion, hard work, all the things in intensity, then do it. Because I see so many men go, no, it's flow. No, that's difficult. That means I'm not supposed to do it. And they're just missing out on that practice of the warrior and the king archetype. And they're just purely anchoring in the lover and magician only. And so that's probably the most practical advice I can give in practice is that from the tiniest things, like in the gym, like you're going to move that weight and you're going to move that impossible weight with your attention and will to large projects that may seem impossible. You're like, I'm going to commit to this. I'm going to make it, even if I don't sleep for the next week, it's going to get done. Right. And so just harmonizing that, because, you know, that type of devotion and practice is exactly the energy that gets to harmonize with the lover magician energy to unlock all this.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. So balancing kind of that energy of flow and, you know, and into also a grounding that into like, yo, like doing hard shit, like I can do hard shit. And like, not only can I do hard shit, I'm going to do hard shit. And when I do that, through the exercise of the willpower, which is part of the soul, it builds confidence and it builds purpose and it builds, and then it starts developing that warrior that, you know what, I'm here to serve. And then the warrior leads to the king, like the entire kingdom is not just me. And for the greatest good of all, I'm going to do this because this is my commission. And even if my leg depends on it, even if whatever depends on it, and this is kind of the archetypes that are rising now for what is to come here. And Pachamama is calling out for men who will be committed to balancing these archetypes so that whatever is needed, all four archetypes are ready for the task at hand, for the state of being at hand. Now, One more just kind of practical question there. Is there a real life situation where you can kind of paint when it is appropriate as a man to be able to lift the sword, right? But with love, to lift the sword. I have a sword, but with love. Like when would in real life kind of it might be appropriate to show that, hey, I do have a sword, but it's with love and I'm willing to fight.
I'll give you a real example in my life.
Cool.
Most of my friends would know me as, I'm a huge fan of like not telling someone exactly what to do because it's kind of taking their sovereignty away. I will give them a new context and allow them to explore. And so this is basically the lover magician way of navigating, right? And so, but there are times, and I'll give you an example. I was talking to a friend who she wanted to have a baby, and she wears tons of makeup, has no awareness of environmental toxins. And I sort of use a little bit of intuition to kind of sense into her beingness, in that she had just incredible amounts of toxins in her system. And my intuition was telling me that if she were to try to conceive a baby, that that baby would not physiologically be healthy. And so I said to her, and again, my friends were around, they were a bit shocked in the moment, but this was like pulling out the sword, but with compassion and love. I said, if you're not going to go through at least a 3-month detox process before you try to conceive, I'm going to punch you in the face. And I said it with like, not joking. It was a very serious tone out there. Like, I'm going to punch you in the face. And she was like, it was like the jolt she needed to be like, oh, like he's not playing around. He's not being like the usual nice, joking, silly Steve. I had to whip out that archetype, and she went and did it. Right. And what's fascinating is, even though she did that, interestingly, she had a hard time conceiving because her system was just so toxically overloaded, and I could just sense it. And that was a time I had to pull out the sword and be like the a-hole Steve and say, like, I'm going to punch you in the face unless you do this. And it took, I could tell it took that type of energy for her soul, spirit, subconscious to take it in. Right. Cause she's a very type A personality that will do it her way. So I knew I needed that energy to get it. So that's a great real world example. So it wasn't done in anger. That force wasn't out of anger. It was out of compassion and love for her, but it needed to be delivered with a very stern tone and stern approach. So.
Yeah. I love that. And did that just come out naturally, Dr. Steve? Like, was that something that you're like, oh, I'm going to bring out my sword? Or was it like, no, just naturally out of love, spontaneously, it just came out?
This is a great, great question. I believe that for me, there was a prerequisite practice for that to just naturally come out, right? It wasn't like a calculated, like, okay, I need to do this. It wasn't calculated. It just came out. The prerequisite was applying the law of polarity to my identity and to love both sides of my attributes or identities, meaning I love and honor my kind and compassion side, but I also love and honor my mean asshole dick side. And through that full honoring of both sides of my identity, allow that side to come out naturally and not have to be calculating or manipulative. It was just like a natural energy that came out.
Because you love both parts of yourself, you did the work with this beautiful lady, embodying your king and embodying your warrior. And because you did that work and you unified the polarities, you had access to all of that. And the core, the subconscious mind, was already ingrained to love. It's coming from love, but you love all of that. And because of that, you're able to reflect that back out of love and compassion with the sword, because you have raised the sword up with yourself, and you have practiced with your own sword on yourself. So that's really beautiful. I want to take this to kind of like a metaphorical allegory of, okay, that's on a microcosm. Now on a macrocosm, humanity is in a really interesting inflection point, a really interesting space. And we mentioned this, like the divine warrior, for the longest time, the biological levels of testosterone are going down, sperm counts are going down. And in fact, according to certain perspectives, there's a very specific targeting and purposeful attempt to decrease sperm counts, to decrease population, to decrease testosterone, and to prevent men from coming into this place of power of their divine warrior and the divine sacred. And there's also things going on around us in society right now, and it's probably not going to stop. So any reflections there on why it's important for men to step into this, and then also kind of what's happening in society and how we can raise the sword with society in a loving, compassionate way without fighting because we have no enemies?
Yeah, great. Great question. I always like to give context, right, in order to navigate the tactical things. You know, it just reminds me of like the Avenger movies. You know, the newer quote unquote villains, right? The old villains from like, you know, 30 years ago, they're like, I hate you all. I'm gonna do this to get you. But the new villains, if you notice, like Thanos is a great example. He doesn't hate anyone. He just believes that killing half of all life actually saves all life in the universe, right? He just has a different story about it. And so this goes, and this is really important to recognize because Thanos isn't an enemy. He just has a different story. He really wants the same thing. He wants all life to thrive. It's just that the Avengers have a different approach than Thanos. This is a very important energy to hold because if not, then it becomes an enemy, right? So even though the movie portrays Thanos as an enemy, I recommend that people see it as he just has a different story. He really wants the same thing. He's not like, I'm going to kill half of the universe because I hate them all, right? He's basically wanting to save the universe. And so again, if we apply that, the Damoherians would call it existence and non-existence. In existence, life creates complexity and beauty, like all kinds of stuff. Non-existence creates order and simplicity. And so these two forces are constantly at play. And so there are certain people that are being influenced by existence, and we will create things and create more life and more complexity. And there are certain people on the planet that are being influenced by non-existence, which they want to take away life and create more order and simplicity. And that's all that's happening. So that's a very important context because that gets rid of the enemies, right? Oh, those people are poisoning us and doing whatever. They just have a different story and way about going about navigating reality, right? So that's a very important context to hold. It helps dissolve the enemy, fight, protect, you know, battle energy. And once we get to that place, we recognize, yes, there absolutely is a statistical thing happening where sperm counts and testosterone is decreasing, right? And if you look at men's physical capabilities from 50 years ago to now, it's appalling, right? If you look at just like the physical fitness of men 50 years ago on average to now, it is a drastic difference, right? I mean, we can obviously obesity rates and all the things have skyrocketed, and men are physically, forget mentally, but physically less capable. And some of this, whether we get into, you know, some people might label it as conspiracy theory, it just is. Like, we don't have to go into the stories of why. This is just what's happening. And again, I just offer the context of there's existence and non-existence at play, right? And so it's more important now than ever before for those of us that are starting to remember that we are on the side of life and existence to take massive action to biologically restore our cellular self, to reduce the inflammation, to get rid of the nanoplastics. I don't know if people realize that the average American ingests a credit card size worth of plastic every week. Right? 5 grams every week is the average. And so we get to reduce some of that by not drinking from, you know, paper cups. Like when you go to Starbucks or get a coffee, you're basically drinking plastic, right? Because the paper is lined with plastic, hot liquids melt the plastic, you drink the plastic. And so, you know, you want to minimize those type of actions. And you basically want to, like, you know, be detoxing to pull out estrogens, buy organic foods, avoid the xenoestrogens that are everywhere, minimize plastic water bottles because that's all filled with, you know, estrogenic BPA, right? So that's the biological. Mechanical, strengthen your body, right? Put your body into physical resistance stress and then rest and repeat that cycle of polarity of rest and stress. And therefore, you create this adaptation process to make your body physically strong. And then from your mind, same thing, right? This is not about no stress, no mental stress. It's you put that mental effort and focus, but you also take moments to rest, right? Rest your mind, whether that may be meditation or whatever activity that is, you know, sort of resting for you. We're meant to do this, right? And as we do this, we start to restore our mind, our body, and our spirit back to its original sacred state, so that we can receive all the knowings and all the instructions and all the things that are right there all the time. This is not a special ability. right? You and I do not have special abilities compared to other humans. We have just taken steps to optimize our sacred selves so that these knowings are coming. So,
I love that. And so this reminds me of a verse in the Bible called, and when Jesus says, oh, you cannot put new wine into old wineskin. So the spirit or the soul is a high frequency vibration. It wants to come in. It wants to send you those messages. And when you activate it, it has higher sensory perception, telepathy, direct cognition, all of these different things. But in order to do that, we have to prepare the wineskin or the vessel to embody the soul so it can hold the frequency, because if it can't hold the frequency, it's going to explode. And so all of these practical tools, the statistics are showing testosterone is going down. That, you know, our strength and resilience, right? So all of these practical tools that Dr. Steven is talking about, stress, rest, we're building our capability, our strength, and then also eliminating toxins from the environment through plastic and all these other things. And we're cleansing the vessel. And, you know, I also noticed that in January, you did some type of a detox thing. So I think there's a lot of really practical tools there that you mentioned that we can incorporate into our life. But also, can you talk a little bit the importance of detox? I know you mentioned it to your friend in January. You had a group do detox. And why is that important? And some practical things for the listeners potentially about detox.
Yeah. I'll set the context first. 12 years ago, EWG, Environmental Working Groups, a nonprofit, they did a test. They sampled a bunch of Americans' blood, adult blood, and cord blood from, you know, newborn babies. What they found was that the newborn baby was born with 100 industrial chemicals in the blood already, and the adult had 200. They repeated the test 10 years later, 2 years ago, those numbers basically doubled, right? The newborn baby right now is born with 200 industrial chemicals that do not belong there, and the average adult is 380 chemicals. Additional stats, the average female takes in and rubs on 140 chemicals a day every day, and the male is roughly half of that, 70 chemicals a day every day. And so we can't, just the other day I was thinking there's a company here, I won't name the company, but there's bottled water company selling rainwater, and people are thinking it's rainwater, it's pure. No, we know rainwater has nanoplastics in it, right? That's just how much we've unfortunately currently added so much chemicals to Mother Earth. This is just the current situation. And it's beautiful, because we are experiencing this for a reason, so that when we get to a place of this purity of Mother Earth, we can enjoy it that much more. And we get to enjoy that ride getting there, right? So none of this is bad. And so we do want to recognize it is the current situation. We're literally swimming in all kinds of chemicals. I mean, just going outside and breathing, you're breathing in chemicals. It's unavoidable. Because it's unavoidable, you ideally are doing a process to pull these toxins out, right? I highly recommend that at least 30 days a year minimum, this is the minimum, that you go through a detox process. Now, what would that be? Well, obviously you want to be mindful of taking less toxins in, and so that your personal care products, your laundry detergent, your dish soap, make sure you're buying from non-toxic sources. And there's a bunch of databases you can, you know, EWG has their own database. A bunch of companies have databases where they've been able to rank different personal care products, household cleaning products as non-toxic or toxic. So buy the non-toxic stuff, simple. Second is you want to make sure that you're sweating on a daily basis, right? Whether that be from moving your body or doing a sauna or infrared sauna, right? Sweating is a great way to release a lot of these toxins. You can also drink plenty of clean water, very important, right? Non-bottled water. Like I have a water distiller. Right now I'm currently in an apartment in Austin, but at my house in New Jersey, we have a central line filter. So every drop of water coming into the house is filtered, right? Because we have a shower filter here, because most people are kind of mindful of their drinking water, forgetting that when you're showering in non-filtered water and all that steam is happening in hot water, you're basically taking in all the toxins in the water, right? And so in any listener, you can actually just type in EWG water on Google and you'll be taken to a database. You can type in your zip code and it will tell you all the chemicals that's in your water right now, if you want to know all the statistics, right? So you want to make sure that you're filtering your water. And lastly, you can do, supplements to enhance the detoxification process. And there's a lot of different supplement companies that sell detoxification processes and supplements. And also, I'm a huge fan of, in fact, I have the book right next to me called Ancient Secrets of a Master Healer, right, by a friend, Clint. And in that book, there's basically a recipe which is for a mung bean soup. And just to give people context, Clint's master, his teacher, Poonam, was regarded as the most prolific, profound, impactful Ayurvedic doctor in India ever, just to give an idea the status of his teacher. And so this mung bean soup and this recipe is incredible at detoxing the system, right? And so you essentially would make this soup and just like, that would be your day's consumption. I highly recommend doing that for, a month, a year, if you can. But if you can't, ingest just mung bean soup for a month, do it for at least a week, right? So that's some of a nutritional, biological supplement strategies that I recommend.
Yeah. And, every season has kind of a consciousness has like, it's time for humanity to do this. It's time for humanity to do this, right? About 10 years ago, everybody was doing breath work. And right now, what I'm finding a trend is detox is kind of this trend that I'm noticing amongst friends in the conscious community. And it's that time. And for me personally, first of all, I think it's important to what Dr. Steven said, it's unavoidable. It's everywhere. It's in the air. It's everywhere. And there's nothing wrong with it because there's a beautiful process of purification and enjoying that ride. But then also taking some time, intentional time every year. And for me, what I found this year was water only fasting for me really cleanses my system. And so there's a place, True North Health Center in Santa Rosa, California, where I'm going to make this a tradition. And so I think it's really good wisdom what Dr. Steven's saying, take some intentional time. Yogi Bhajan says every spring he would only eat bananas for a month or something like this, whatever it is. And then to be mindful of your everyday, making sure to heal the water and the water will heal us, right? And literally filtering that water and making sure that it's high frequency water and it's pure because we are water. And for me, my current obsession, man, I want to share this with our listeners because it's done so much for me. It's helping me so much, is a GI detox kit called Zen Cleanse. Mm-hmm. And I'll put it in the show notes. It's a one-day detox. And these people in Taiwan created Taiwan. And literally, you get it in about 3 or 4 days and, it's one day. And you literally just take these liquids every 30 minutes and fruit enzymes. And I'm telling you, I've been going very deep into this and, I want to get, I guess I will get woo-woo. There's a coat that is lining the gut, yeah. The gut film. It's a biofilm. In ancient spiritual wisdom, they call it like a jellyfish archontic, and literally parasites and bacteria and literally AI technology lives there. And these guys have a world of, they have a mind of their own. They literally, sometimes those negative thoughts that people are having, it's actually because of these little guys down there. And when you have these negative thoughts in the mind, that's hell. When your mind is quiet, that's heaven, right? And so literally these little guys for a mile long living in there, and you do this one day supplement and literally some of my friends, I've done a lot of cleanses before. So like I didn't get the whole biofilm, but the next day I had like four, getting a little graphic here, huge stools, like really weird color. And like, and then, but my friends are sending me like literally biofilms of parasites coming out. And literally for the next, I feel clearer. I literally feel my thoughts are lighter. I literally feel, and you're talking about mental health, the gut and the brain are connected. And so I'm going to link this, the Zen Cleanse, in the show notes. For me personally, I'm probably going to do it once every 2-3 months. Until I'm, making sure that my gut is really clear. And so, detox, taking those intentional 30 days, and then also environmental, in your environment, water, and supplements, I think can be a really powerful thing for mental health and to also cleanse the body so that the soul can embody and we can embody these archetypes and be ready for what I call the most epic love story ever, what's about to come for humanity here. And we ain't even had breakfast yet. One of the last few things I want to talk to you about, Dr. Steven, is King Arthur and Excalibur. This is an interesting timeline and storyline for humanity that has become a legend. And from my studies, I would love to hear just kind of your perspective on King Arthur, because I mean, we just talked about the king archetype, King Arthur, the Round Table, Excalibur. Would love to hear just kind of any of your perspectives on that.
Yeah, this is definitely showing up big time recently, right? Without even like a desire to sort of seek it out. You know, just about a month ago, I was in a castle in Maryland hosting a gathering with the Pachamama Alliance and other indigenous wisdom keepers, like a lineage of shamans from Ecuador, from all over the world. And there were 12 of us that gathered at this castle, and we sat at this round table. And upstairs in this other room is this sword, which represents the living energy of Excalibur in this lifetime. There's a whole story behind that sword. It was struck by lightning, all the things. And so 2 weeks before that, I also got a message from the coach that I work with, right? The same coach that helped me initiate into the archetypes, especially the warrior and the king. She reached out and said, she's being instructed to hold an event in Glastonbury over in the UK to basically install what she calls the honor codes into 12 men, basically King Arthur's wisdom, Merlin's magic energy all together into these men for the future. And so, and this is just, you know, not me like wanting to go read about it. It's just literally coming into the field like rapid fire. And so, whenever this happens, I take it as yes, because there's no time, right? Technically, there's no linear time. These energies are just, they're here, right? They're here and they're available for all of us. And this is why we just spent so much time talking about the importance of stepping into that warrior and that king archetype, because I believe that that is a path that allows us to receive those honor codes and those king codes even more than how we're receiving it now. And I believe this is all happening because the moment that we're in right now is exactly here, because we just experienced a few decades of, you know, a lot of people would say chaos with all the things that are happening in the world. All of this is so that this beautiful, like you said, love story, we get to step into this greatest character for us to play this incredible role for our own incredible excitement. And the side effect is humanity benefits. Right? Like, we literally get to have the most fun. And part of that is like, what guy would want to be King Arthur? Right? And so it becomes this incredible game of like, this is just coming in. Got it. I get to go through my, like, being knighted, right? To be initiated into this process, right? And to have that indomitable will, and to have the exceptional knights aren't out of shape. Like, they're like in physically really good shape. Everything we've talked about, right, is designed as a step-by-step process to allow us to step into that sort of King Arthur Merlin energy. It's happening. And the beauty of it is it's happening no matter what, right? And as we've talked a lot about these recommendations, I always like to harmonize that with, oh, it's going to happen no matter what. Trust me. Like, you're going to be led down this path whether you want to or not. It's just naturally going to happen. And I know this because of law correspondence. My life, I did not one day sit down and say, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I'm literally just being led into these roles and these actions. And so because of law correspondence, if that is my reality, I'm now going to project that into all of reality. And so therefore, every listener and viewer, just a fair warning, this is coming and you're just going to be naturally led into this no matter what. So.
Yeah, beautiful. From my studies, King Arthur in that timeline, and the round table, there were these round tables, and once again, it comes back to astrogeomancy and sacred grid work. Yes, embodying those codes and then dropping those codes into Mother Earth so that all of humanity has access through it, through the ley lines, and then the stars are being rewritten. And King Arthur and the sacred knights were grid workers who were actually protectors and sacred protectors and running high frequency at certain sacred land. And Glastonbury is a sacred land, you know, so much history on that land. And Excalibur was actually a Stargate opening tool that can open Stargates. And how appropriate that it was stuck by lightning. Stargates are portal ascension passages in and out of Mother Earth. And whoever controls the Stargates and you know, literally these sacred pieces of land that can open up can control, like, literally, like how, for example, when Atlantis was thriving, they had access to the Ark of the Covenant, which was it's almost like there was a multi-dimensional frequency which was opened, which was penetrating into the earth, which was giving them access to multi-dimensional technologies, and the civilization was thriving for a while. And when the Ark of the Covenant, which is a portal between D2 Cora and D9 Andromeda, moved to Egypt after the fall of Atlantis, Egypt started to thrive because it had access to the soul, the Sirius B, to the Universal Stargate 6. And so as you start opening these portals in the Stargates, all of these codes, multidimensional soul, oversoul starts embodying into the earth. And we start lifting the frequency of Mother Earth through these round tables and you know, into a higher frequency, which will lift the frequency of the ley lines of Mother Earth, which will eventually, if enough of us do this at sacred sites all around the world where the stars are connected, so are the earth below, then we can lift and shift into, if you want to call it what people are calling New Earth, New Jerusalem, Zion, whatever you want to call it, 5D Earth, a pre-fall Atlantis, Atlantis rising. And yeah, I just wanted to kind of end, Dr. Stephen, by kind of asking, I think the journey, you've spelled it out so many times, the journey is the key. It's the total experience in the moment, and allowing what wants to unfold, but also like your vision for the New Earth, your vision for a new human. Any thoughts there?
Yeah. I've been given specific images where this transition phase, how it's going to happen is there's going to be these communities at specific sites being set up throughout the world. And these communities are going to be set up with the astrogeomancy, the proper sort of alignment and energies. And these communities won't need teachers or gurus about the things. It is the environment, like it's just set up that way. And so people will be attracted to these communities just by being on site. They're contributing to the energetics of Earth. And if some of them start to leave these communities, they basically carry the codes even more, and they bring that vibration outside of these communities to other areas. And so these communities are, think of it as like the node points of catalyst that starts to shift humanity even more. And I know so many people who are basically in the process of building these communities. And, you know, for me, really, the human in the future is essentially able to experience the multidimensional true aspects of themselves, right? That they're simply acting without inhibition, with complete self-expression, and essentially they're just playing, right? There's a lot of this like hard work stuff. You know, they're just going to play intensely and have the greatest joy in life, right? We all get to be kids again, basically. And so, and we've experienced all this adult pressure, burden, stress, loneliness, all that thing, so that we can appreciate the play and the love and the joy that's all it's happening, right? We can only appreciate cold when we've been really hot. We've been initiated to feel all the hot, and then now we're going to head towards the cold and the joy and the love side. And that's the beauty. And the thing is, you know, we've talked about the Kogi, the prophecy, and all the things. My inner knowing is we're absolutely going to get there. There's no if and buts about it. Like, we're going to make it.
Aho, aho, and so it is. I learned a new word, ah fucking ho. That is it. And Dr. Stephen, anything else that is coming through for you? Anything else that we haven't talked about that you wanted to share with the listeners today?
How can they find you?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a message that I've been called to share with everyone, either one-on-one conversations or broadcasts, which is the inner awareness is you are ready. Like, everything about your life has been preparing you for this. There's nothing missing. You do get to experience new things and new inputs, but you're absolutely ready. That's the sort of overall energy broadcast. And for me, for connecting, social media, you know, like, let's say Instagram, it's Stephen Young Alchemist. I do have my site that I'm currently revamping to put out a lot more content, which is just drsteveyoung.com. So those are two best ways to connect with me.
Dr. Stephen Young, absolute pleasure to have you on the on the show today. Thank you. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for your time. And everyone is ready. New Earth, let's go.
Yes.
Love, light, peace, and truth to all sentient beings.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of the Spiritual Psychiatrist Podcast. We hope today's show has provided you with the insights, inspiration, and tools you need to remember who you really are, live your best life, and fulfill your hero's journey. What's up, family? I wanted to introduce you to the most affordable, accessible, pure compound grade peptides that you can find on the market. We're super excited and proud to launch this company, www.practicalpeptides.com. And our aim for this company was to allow people to order peptides straight from their home and receive pure pharmaceutical grade peptides to help people lose weight naturally, to help people build muscle, to get shredded, to get into their best physical, emotional, mental shape of their lives. So if this is something you're interested in, go ahead and check out www.practicalpeptides.com. The link will be down below. To stay connected with our podcast community, please subscribe, share, rate, and review the show on your preferred platform. Your feedback helps us reach more souls on their path to healing and self-realization. 1 billion souls, let's go. For access to show notes, transcripts, and additional resources, please visit our website at www.samuelblemd.com, www.samuelblemd.com. You'll also find information about upcoming episodes and special guests. Remember, your journey towards healing and self-realization is a sacred one, and you are never, ever alone on your journey. It's an absolute joy and an honor to support you on your hero's path, the path of truth, and the truth will set you free. Until our next episode, I encourage you to take a look inside, and you will find you are who you've been looking for the whole damn time. And always remember, be you. Be unique. Be beautiful. This is Dr. Samuel Lee signing off from the Spiritual Psychiatrist Podcast. We'll see you in the next episode.